From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, roll tide, roll. Muddy waters, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to hit us up on that text line, respond to anything we were talking about. Rittenhouse, or the new polls out showing a tightening senatorial race, or this decision to delay the implementation of the Alabama Literacy Act. Hit us up and let us know what you are thinking. I see one text here, if you want to weigh in on Joe Bonner being named the new University of South Alabama president. All that and more coming up on the program. So they'll come on the program, by the way, State Representative Andrew Sorrell, that's in about a half hour. And from the Alabama Policy Institute, my friend, former State Senator Phil Williams, we'll talk about said Alabama Literacy Act. But joining us now, he's running for Congress up in the 5th Congressional District. That's Mo Brooks District, North Alabama. But he's also the former Assistant Secretary of the Army. Very pleased to bring on Casey Wardinski to the program. And Casey, how are you this morning?
Very good. Thanks for inviting me on today.
Hey, thank you for making time for us. First off, it's Veterans Day, and I know as a veteran yourself here, but it's an important day that we take a few moments to think about those who serve the country and, you know, honor them. Talk a little bit about this day, if you would.
Well, you know, it's an important day because it's for the veterans that are with us. Some people get it confused with Memorial Day, which is for the veterans who are no longer with us. And this is a way of recognizing the contribution that, you know, folks who served in uniform have made at the game. After World War I, on November 11th, for a very specific reason, that was the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month. 1918, the war ended in World War I, and about 3 years later, Congress decided to commemorate that going forward, and they called it Armistice Day. And then later on, I think it was when President Eisenhower was president, they renamed it to Veterans Day to recognize everybody that served in the subsequent wars, World War II, Korea, and so forth. And it continues to this day. 100 years ago, they brought back the unknown from World War I, this individual who the battlefields they were unable to identify. They selected one to bring home and interred him in the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington 100 years ago. And these things are important because they mark the important role people play in securing freedom and the sacrifices that are made. And on today's like today, I'm in Athens here at the Alabama Veterans Museum getting ready to be part of a commemoration to thank those who have served.
And, you know, this... you probably could speak to this better, but the perception is, you know, these guys who served to protect, to protect the country, things aren't. I don't know where morale is, but I think certainly after the way Afghanistan has gone, a 20-year occupation and without much to show for it, there are times that we gotta kind of look back and look at what the service was all about.
We do, and this is a pretty important point in our history, unfortunately. I have an editorial today on the Red Sox Broadcast Network talking about, remembering Veterans Day, looking at what's going on today and taking the money from it, and then looking at what veterans are up to and seeing that as a cause for hope. There's veterans now very engaged in the political process that normally would never have been engaged. Up in Washington State, you got a guy like Joe Kent, who's running, and, former assistant Secretary of the Interior, as he keeps running, for Congress, because Congress has been the weak spot. And when Trump was president, they did nothing. For 2 years that the Republicans in the House and the Senate, Paul Ryan and McConnell, did nothing. Here today, we're looking at these enormous infrastructure bills, and there's not a nickel in them to protect our border. We need to finish the walls along the Mexican border, and not a penny in there. President Trump got 450 miles built. He turned to the Army and had the Army reallocate resources to build that wall. But it's time for people to stand up, and veterans who, serve to protect freedom see it under attack here at home. They never would have envisioned that. And so now they're rising to the call to run for office, which, is not a lot of fun. In many cases, fundraising and all that stuff some people enjoy. And then, the public scrutiny that comes with it can be, torturous. but it's important, so they're doing it. And they're going to go to Congress, and they're going to stand up for our country and our freedoms. They got the grit and the courage to do it, and they'll be there when President Trump is president again or President DeSantis. But this Biden bunch and his Myrmidons got to go.
You know something, historically, one of the prerequisites to serving in politics, certainly to be president, was some kind of military service. And I guess starting kind of with Clinton, that doesn't seem to be any longer necessarily a prerequisite. And look, I don't think it is a necessarily something if you didn't serve, then you're disqualified. Don't get me wrong, but maybe that more and more that you don't have political leaders that served in some capacity in the military that really have an appreciation for that. It sometimes gets lost in our policymaking.
I think, we used to see a lot of military government because we had had these huge wars. We'd had the Civil War, and of course, most casualties ever suffered as a country. It was really on both sides of the war. And the River Mon, which was about 5 million Americans, World War II was 16 million Americans. Today, we've got 19 million veterans. It's a small fraction. It's 5% of Americans. After World War I, it was 10% of Americans. So fewer serve, so it's less likely to have a veteran. But, Reagan was terrific. He was not a uniform member. And I believe Trump did a great job. He was not in uniform. We had Jimmy Carter, who was, and he was awful. So you don't think it's a prerequisite. But I do think when you serve around the world, you can see how god-awful a lot of the world is. And their institutions are pathetic. And you have a terrific appreciation for what we have here in America. And you won the lottery because you were born here, and you appreciate the important institutions like the rule of law. Biden has no respect for it. He's got the rule of power. The court says, hey, hold up on this mandate. And he says, no, industry ought to go ahead. This summer they said, the CDC ruling on not being able to collect rent from people that were in your property. CDC said, no, you can't do that. COVID. Court said, yes, you can, and then they turned around and wrote another regulation, says, no, you can, and made a criminal offense to collect it. And finally, the Supreme Court ruled and said, no, you can collect rent. But at every turn, our institutions are under attack by the leftists. And I think those that have served are particularly aware that these institutions matter, rule of law, Constitution, Bill of Rights, and they're willing to do something about it.
Well, and I tell you, I think we're at a crisis of confidence in our institutions in this country. It doesn't really matter. I think both sides of the aisle, both sides of the political spectrum, if you will, have doubts about some of the elite institutions in this country. And a lot of that, it does go back to, like you say, having an appreciation, especially government, when you had people that served in the military that had recognized a structure, right? How things work. And now we're trying to redo that structure. We're trying to go around, do an end run around that structure, as you mentioned with this vaccine mandate and the rhetoric from the Biden administration, that you don't really, this theory of a chain of command or a protocol that you adhere to, that if you start tinkering with that, everything sort of collapses around it. And I think that's what's causing this, people's doubts in our so-called elite institutions.
Yeah, well, and some of the people in these institutions are really doing a lot to undermine them. I mean, well acquainted with the military, and you got General Milley. He has done more to hurt the credibility of the military probably than any person I can think of in modern times. I have great concerns now based on who's running our services at the top. They've cloned themselves. They don't respect civilian control of the military. They don't respect institutions, and they don't respect their proper role within them. And you can see it even in the military with the vaccine mandate. I mean, these folks were mobilized, many in the Guard, to help with the pandemic. They weren't vaccinated. They answered the call. And today we're getting ready to throw them out by the droves because they're very vaccine hesitant. They're young. They're healthy. The military's lost maybe 70 people in total out of 3 million or so in some way to the pandemic. And, it's a trivial threat to them statistically. And yet we're going to look at throwing 40-50% of the Army Guard and Reserve out because they're not vaccinated. That's just ridiculous. It doesn't respect them, their belief structures, the families that sent them. And frankly, it doesn't have much to say about the respect for this part of the country because the most vaccinated people in America tend to be in the Southeast. So even the people at the top of these institutions are tearing them apart, Millie and his group.
When is this becoming a national security concern? Look, it seems like we've been talking about China as an adversarial threat to the United States all my lifetime, but it really looks like it's more apparent now. Look at how Hong Kong fell. Look at the South China Sea and the way they're building up there. Even though myself included, think that they're responsible for this COVID-19 pandemic, but they remain to be one of the global threats on the horizon. And I wonder, when we talk about our preparedness and we have these situations where you have these, as I say, crises of confidence, that just makes us even more vulnerable than we were before.
I agree with you entirely. The evacuation of Kabul should have been a wake-up call to all of us. You could not have planned a bigger disaster. I've almost come to the conclusion that, the people on the left, they're not idiots, they're not insane. They mean to really wreck our country and weaken it. And that was a great way to start, by demoralizing the military, destroying its credibility abroad, making us look ineffective and feckless. And it continues with this vaccine business. That's a tangible destruction of military readiness by putting people out who are very expensive to acquire and train and very capable. We've no thought of how they'll be replaced. And we're talking about, hundreds of thousands if they execute this plan and the military guard and reserve remain as hesitant as they are. You look at the National Defense Authorization Act. I know that's a topic of debate in the senatorial race, and I'd be dead set against that darn thing. It's a roadmap to destroying America. They're going to start with the military. And they'll gather the data they need, and then they'll try and generalize it to the national population. But it's got new laws, that are red flag laws. It's got new, very vague criminal activities. They call them violent extremism, which is just an accumulation of minor, vague infractions of the law. And they make that a major subject of the Defense Authorization Act. They create a new office at the Undersecretary of Defense level to gather data, create reports, conduct surveys, investigate along those lines, as well as white supremacy. All those things tear away at the cohesion of the military, and you're going to end up with a tribal military, which is probably what they want. A tribal military is going to look a lot like a tribal Afghanistan, totally ineffective when the threat comes, and it just vaporizes in the face of an enemy. We can't have that.
So you think that NDAA, and I know Congressman Brooks took some heat for it, for voting against it, but so did Robert Aderholt, so did Gary Palmer, I think the two yes votes, so did Barrymore, the two yes votes, obviously, Jerry Carl and Mike Rogers, split delegation, but the criticism was that it was too much investment in social engineering, and that outweighed the whatever the tangible benefits were for Alabama's defense contractors and national security as a whole, that it does more harm than it does good.
That's my view. It had a pay raise for the troops in there, which is good, but we can't be bought off on the cheap. That's what the Republicans have been doing for too long. We've been bought off on the cheap. We get some economic things we care about. But the social and cultural things are the leftists, and they've been eating away for 50 years, and now they're on the doorstep of the Bill of Rights and fundamental beliefs that we hold about our country. Their cancel culture, their use of the media, they own all the institutions except maybe the military at this point, maybe the church. But they're after those too, and the NDAA is a big step forward in flipping the military in their direction, along with academia, the media, and I don't want to go down that road. We've got to protect the military. We'll have the House in less than 2 years. And then from a position of strength, we can negotiate this stuff. The money things, we can wait. Let's not screw up fundamental things that we won't be able to undo, because it'll take a president and a majority in the Senate in a veto-proof sort of situation to undo what has now been done if the Senate approves the NDAA.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. The report a couple of weeks ago, Wall Street Journal report, $450,000 per person affected by the so-called zero tolerance policy of the Trump administration, an idea floated by the Biden administration's Department of Homeland Security. I don't know where that goes, but the idea that they were considering it, that to me, you look at what we pay casualties of war, people that served, it's not even close that you're going to give a handout the illegal immigrants, the people that willingly broke the law versus people that serve the country seems to be a very big disconnect at minimum to me.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think the death gratuity for military service members killed in action or training events is about $100,000. And they're looking at giving, you know, $450 per child, I think $1 million per family. What an insult. And, of course, what a draw to more illegal immigrants. They think they're going to hit the payday as they get up here. And what an insult to the Coast Guard. We got folks all over our coast trying to turn back a tide of illegal immigration. I know one in particular, regularly taking Haitians back to Haiti, and yet they turn on Evening News, and here's, you know, thousands of Haitians coming across our southern border, and it's fine. It's totally demoralizing for the people charged with securing our borders, whether it's the Coast Guard or the Border Patrol. It invites more illegal immigration, and it's of course just, you know, one would think it's crazy, but it's beginning to look like part of an overall plan to destroy this country.
Casey, we're up against a break here, but folks want to find out more about your campaign or anything else you're up to, tell them where to look.
Sure. They can please go to friendsofcasey.com and see my platform. It's very much America First sort of platform. I was his assistant secretary and believe in what he was doing.
Casey Wardinski, ladies and gentlemen. Casey, thanks for making time.
Thank you very much. Have a great Veterans Day.
We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.